Welcome back, dear students. We're ready to tackle our second presentation on financial ratios. So get out those income statements and balance sheets for Sprouts, or have them available on your machine, and get your trusty calculator because we're going to do some calculations. The first ratios we'll take a look at are the profitability ratios. These are financial ratios that measure a firm's returns by relating profits to sales, profits to assets, profits to equity. And a few of them are very popular. The net present margin, or net profit margin, after-tax profit, the return on assets, and the return on equity. Those are three. In fact, those are pretty easy to find online. The gross margin, the operating margin, those are easy to do. These are all easy to do, but you don't normally see those in the financial media. But you can do them. You'll see. It's not that hard. Profitability ratios allow one to measure the ability of a firm to earn an adequate return on sales, total assets, and invested capital. So let's take a look at the net profit margin, the after-tax profit margin. This is the rate of profit being earned from earnings after expenses and taxes. So what do? We take the bottom line, the net income, and divide it by the top line, the total revenue. And of course, the higher the better, and it varies greatly from industry to industry, so we must take a look at companies that are our competitors. So let's run over. So we got the net income and the total revenue. Where are these from? They're from the income statement. So let's take a look at Sprout's income statement. What's the top line number? 6468759. What's the bottom line number? 287450. So I've already done these. Make sure I'm correct. But I get a net profit margin of 4.44%, which sounds not that great, huh? Well, we have to look at other grocery store chains. Sprouts is a little different, right? Whole Foods is now owned by Amazon, right? So you can't compare them to Whole Foods. But if we were to compare them against other grocers, we'd find that, hey, that's actually pretty high. Grocery stores have very low profit margins. Why? Because they work on volume. They make a little bit of money off of their products, but they sell a ton of them. They might make a few pennies on something they sell, but they sell it to you every day. So they're not doing too badly when they sell you the same thing over and over again, but even with a very low margin. So we have to compare this net profit margin of 4.44% with competitors in the field. Okay? That's typical for, we're going to say this over and over again, for all these ratios, we must compare them to our competitors. The gross margin is the exact same idea, but we need to look at the gross profit and divide that by the top line number. So we go back to our income statement, and there's the gross profit of 2379289, realizing that there's a three more zeros after this, by the way, 2379289, and then divide it by the top line number of 6468759, and I get 36.78. So we want you to make sure you get that too. Okay, do the calculation and make sure I didn't get it wrong. I mean, I didn't get it right. Make sure I did not get it wrong. Right. Make sure I got it right. 36.78. Which again, is that high? Is that low? I don't know. We have to look at the competitors and see how they're doing. My guess, without looking at Kroger's, which is Albertson, or Safeway, which is Vons for us in San Diego, that it's probably higher because it's a more specialty grocer as opposed to those which are general purpose grocers. And the same thing is true for the next slide, the operating income instead of the net profit or the gross income. Gross profit, we use the operating profit or the operating income. So we run over to the income statement, and we see that the operating income is 391,296. We divide that by the top line number of, wait a minute, something, my number's not right. I just know it's not right. I have 30 points. That's not right. I got the wrong operating income. That's the problem. I wrote down the wrong operating income. So I'll let you decide what to do. I have to get the calculator out. I know I did a mistake. I mean, I look at that number. I said, that's not right. I wrote down the total operating expenses. And I was looking at that. I said, that operating margin seems way too high. So, dear students, you figure it. Actually, I'll do it. Okay, I'll get my calculator out. I'll do it. I wrote down the wrong number. Calculator, tell me, 391,296. That's the operating profit, operating income. If it were a loss, it'd be in parentheses. And we divide that by 6,468,759, and we get 0.605 or 6.05%. That makes a whole lot more sense. I was thinking that number would look way too high. Let me write that down here. 6.05. Okay, make sure I got it right, though. Make sure I got it right. Now, if you run on over to Yahoo or MarketWatch, I'll bet you you're going to find the net profit margin. You won't probably find the gross margin, but I bet you you'll find the operating margin. See if I'm wrong or not, but just to make sure, check. Now, what they might do is they might have next to the number TTM. What does that stand for? Trailing 12 months. They might have a different number than you create. Why is that? Because they might be looking at the last four quarters, not the year. If you look at our income statement, it says, hey, we're looking at the entire year from January 1st, 2020 up to December 31st, 2020. But as soon as we get into April, they're going to then go back and use the second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter of 2020, and then they use the first quarter of 2021. So they're not going to be using the same numbers. So you get a little different number. And that's what TTM stands for, trailing 12 months. So that makes more sense. 6.05% makes a whole lot more sense. I was wondering, way too high. Okay. Whoa. Okay, now, let's read here. You guessed it, the higher the better, and it varies greatly from industry to industry. So when we are looking at specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within the industry. When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in industry, it is a signal that we have more investigative work to do. Doesn't mean we should buy, doesn't mean we should not buy, we should sell, we should not sell. It means we have more sleuthing. We have more research to do to peel back more layers of the onion, if you like that analogy. And if you don't like that analogy, my apologies, but I like to think of it like a layer of an onion. Just keep pulling and pulling apart until you finally get to the, but you never do. You know, these companies are way too big for any one person to know everything about them, even the people working there, you know. Okay, now, the next two are very popular, and you will find these online. The return on assets, and then the next one, the return on equity. So this measures how profitable a company is relative to its total assets. So you take that same bottom line number, the net income, but this time you go to the balance sheet and you divide it by the total assets. Return on assets looks at the amount of resources a company needs to support operations. It reveals how effective the company is in generating profits from the assets that it has available to it. And of course, the higher the better, very popular, and we look at other companies, right? We have to look at the competitors. So if we go to the income statement, we find the bottom line number 287,450, And then we go to the balance sheet and look at the total assets of 3150000, and we wind up with about the 9% or so, 9.13%. Check to make sure you got that number. Now, this is a gross amount here. There's actually more detail that's missing out of here. So we find that we really should go into the Edgar statements, the financial statements on Edgar, and get all the numbers. Yahoo is just reporting 3.1505, and then the rest of it's all kind of just blown away. They reported 3.15 with a B, billion. But still, it's close enough. 9%, yeah, it's close enough. Because remember, we're just comparing it to their competitors. So that's pretty good. Return on assets is pretty good. Of 9%, again, comparing it to other grocery chains. But the next one is even more revealing. Return on investment, return on equity. This is a measure of the overall profitability of a company in relation to the shareholders' equity. So we take that same bottom line number, but this time we divide it by how much equity is in the firm. Because return on equity uses the stockholders' equity instead of total assets for the denominator, the return on equity is very sensitive to the amount of debt a company is carrying. Specifically, if a company carries a great amount of debt, return on equity, return on investment, will be much larger than return on assets. You are using other people's money to make your money. And now, some investors like this. They think it's good, right? Because, hey, you hear this quite a bit in the real estate world, because that's the way the world works in real estate. You are borrowing usually a very large sum of money to invest. You're using other people's money to make your money. But there's a downside, right? It's a two-edged sword. Too much debt can get you in a whole lot of trouble, especially when there's a downturn in the economy. So other investors are worried about the possible negative consequences of too much debt. So we remember that net income. Have you written it down? I've written it down. Of 287,540, so we won't go back to the income statement. But let's go to the balance sheet and find the total stockholders' equity of 881,920. All right, 881,920, or 90. I wrote it down again. I wrote 920 down instead of 290. My apologies. So my number is going to be a little off. You're going to get a little different number. So take that net income and divide it by the stockholders' equity, and you should get about 30-some percent. Should get about 30-some percent. Check it out. I mean, I'm going to have to do it because I got 32.89, but I know it's wrong because I wrote down the wrong number. I hope you consider this entertaining, that I'm making mistakes like crazy, because that's, you know, you're human. We're all human. Okay, so 881,290, not 920, and I get 32.25%. Make sure you check that out. Now make sure you got 32.25. So you see that the return on assets, which was about 9%, 9.13, is much less than the return on equity. Why is that? Look at how much debt they have on the books. Over $2 billion of debt. So that's why the return on equity, because it's sensitive to the amount of debt the company has, is much higher than the return on assets. Now, there's another one that we don't cover in the book. We don't cover it because it's another one that Warren Buffett uses. He calls it the return on invested capital. And it's basically the same idea, but he adds a couple of things in to the bottom line. So to the bottom denominator. So maybe you want to check that out. It's just another one. Type in Warren Buffett, return on invested capital is what he calls it. Yeah, return on invested capital. Maybe we should throw it in there. But it's just another ratio. Okay, so those were the profitability ratios. Let's take a look at the liquidity ratios. Liquidity is, what do you remember with liquidity? The ability, right, to turn your assets into cash or have enough cash to deal with issues. And that's what liquidity stands for. Financial ratios concerned with the firm's ability to meet its day-to-day operating expenses and satisfy its short-term obligations as they come due. Now, there are two very popular ratios, the current ratio and the acid test ratio, also called the quick ratio. Sounds scary, right? Acid test ratio. The net working capital is our one exception to everything we're looking at because it's not a ratio. So we have to have at least one exception to the ratio analysis, right? This is actually just a number, and we'll see how it differs from all the other two. But these two you will find in the financial media very easily. Please do the calculations yourself, but you'll find these just by looking them up. So let's take a look at the current ratio, one of the more popular financial ratios. We take the current assets and divide them by the current liabilities. Now remember, the accountants call anything current that's something that we can use within a year, and these are usually very liquid items, cash or short-term investments, inventories, accounts receivable. Those are current assets. Current liabilities are accounts payable, debts due, short-term debts due and the like, payroll and the like. The current ratio is a good indicator of how stable a company is. Anything over one is normally considered acceptable. If your current assets equal or exceed your current liabilities, you should be able to satisfy your short-term obligations without any problems. You're not going to get hauled off the bankruptcy court. Obviously, the greater the number is, the better. But then you get into situations, especially with tech companies, where they have cash coming out of their ears and the current ratios, you know, are 100 or more. And you just think, what are you going to do with all this cash? And they go, we don't know. So more and more of these companies like Apple, like Microsoft and the like, are paying out much higher dividends because they got all this cash. They don't know what to do. How many more times can they write Windows without screwing it up even more? How many more times can they write weird or excuse? Anyway, so let's take a look at the current ratio for Sprouts, and that's on the balance sheet. We take a look at the current assets, 465,950. Make sure you write that down. And we divide that by the current liabilities, 496,140. And you'll notice, look at that, they're almost exactly the same. The liabilities, accounts payable, short-term debt coming due, long-term debt coming due, and current liabilities, almost $500 million. And our cash and cash equivalents, accounts receivable, inventory, and other current assets, $466 million. So we find that the current ratio is almost one, not quite one. It's 0.939 is what I get. Make sure you get that. And of course, check out what Morningstar or MarketWatch or Yahoo has to say about it. So that means that the current assets are a tiny bit higher than current liabilities. It's not ideal, but oh no, we don't have to worry about them going bankrupt anytime soon. Yes, they're doing just fine. And now here comes our outlier. This isn't a ratio. Notice it's a subtraction. It's not a ratio. It's not one number divided by another number. This is the absolute dollar measure of liquidity. And you don't hear too much about it, except when people like me who are worried about how much cash do they really have to be able to pay off their debts. The net working capital is the current ratio in dollar terms. If the current ratio is greater than one, then this will be positive. If the current ratio is less than one, then it will be negative. And of course, the higher the net working capital, the better, because it just means we have that much more cash or cash equivalents to pay off our short-term debts. Now, in the case who were you looking at? Sprouts. In the case of Sprouts, you take 465,950, almost 466 million, and you subtract 496 million, and you get about $30 million of negative working capital. But yeah, it's Sprouts. They're not going anywhere. They could, if they needed to, they could easily raise the that kind of $30 million for a company that has, you know, hundreds of stores. It's not that big a deal. But it is another piece of the puzzle to look at and think about. Now we're back to ratios. And this one has a great name, the acid test ratio, the quick ratio. This is a more stringent version of the current ratio. What is it? It's the same thing, current assets divided by current liabilities, but we subtract out the assets. So it's actually, it's a whole lot easier to just take the current total current assets and subtract inventory. But you can add the cash, the accounts receivable, the short-term investments, the other current assets, and get the same number. So unlike the current ratio, the acid test ratio excludes inventory. Why would you want to exclude inventory? Well, the ratio this ratio measures the ability of the company to meet its short-term obligations, even if its current inventory becomes obsolete or undesirable, or and hence difficult or impossible to be turned into cash. So anything greater than one is considered more than adequate. But if we look at Sprouts, it doesn't look that good if we look at it, because why? Their inventory is $254 million, which is about half, a little more than half of their current assets. They've got a whole lot of stuff, a lot of money tied up in the inventory. So when we do the calculation, it turns out that the acid test ratio is only 42.7% or 0.427, which is something that might be alarming if it were a company that whose products went obsolete quickly. If it were a computer company or some other company whose products become obsolete, you know, almost, you know, 6 months, it's, oh my goodness, that's, you know, obsolete. And so this is why companies such as computer companies, Dell, you know, you've heard of Dell, right? Dell Computers. They were one of the first to they weren't the only ones now, everybody does it, but they pioneered this wonderful method where they never even built a machine. They never built any machines to go into inventory. Obviously, they had to design and build the computer to make sure it works and everything. But no, they waited until they got the order. Then they built the machine. They didn't keep any inventory. And so they had to, you know, this is not an easy thing to do, folks. You have to make sure that everything gets there at the right time so that when somebody orders a computer, you can build it very quickly. And they do. They're very smart that way. Now, of course, they do have some computers now that they send out to the stores. But still, this is how they got started. This is how Dell got started. But what about Sprouts? I mean, well, obviously, food does spoil, but they have plenty of customers who are going to buy it from them, and it's not like the dry foods go out. They might canned foods might be 2 or 3 years before they're obsolete. So you know, we don't really have to worry too much about Sprouts, their acid test ratio being very low. What we have to make sure is that they're earning money and we got people coming in the door. If that were to ever happen, then that acid test ratio would be important. That wouldn't be the only thing that's important, because the stuff would start rotting on the shelves. So those are the liquidity ratios. Now let's take a look at the activity ratios. And when these are ratios that were near and dear, and the next group also, to Mr. Benjamin Graham's heart. So when, not if, but when you do read The Intelligent Investor, he's going to show you how a master deals with some of these activity and then the next turnover ratios. So this group is also called the efficiency ratios. Don't read The Intelligent Investor as your first book. No, read One Up on Wall Street or A Random Walk Down Wall Street. So the activity ratios are ratios that are used to measure how well a firm is managing its assets. How often do you turn over your accounts receivable? How often do you turn over your inventory? How often do you turn over the total assets? These ratios use data from the balance sheet and the income statement. Activity ratios measure a firm's ability to convert different accounts within their balance sheets into cash or sales. Companies will try to turn their production into cash or sales as fast as possible because this will generally lead to higher revenues. So let's take a look at the accounts receivable turnover. Now, do you know what, I threw these terms at you, accounts receivable, accounts payable, and you might not know what they mean. So my apologies, you accounting students certainly know what they mean. Accounts receivable are payments that are going to be made to us from our customers. And in the case of Sprouts, obviously the customers pay right away, but they're looking at accounts receivable from a standpoint of the stores paying the main office. Does that make any sense? I don't know if it makes any sense. But accounts payable are the exact opposite. Those are payments that we haven't made yet. We've already bought the goods and services, right? We need to buy, we already bought them, in case of Sprouts, mostly goods. But now we have to pay them. So that's what accounts payable is. Accounts receivable is the other way around. Money is going to come in the door. It just hasn't gotten here yet. So we take the total revenue, the top line number, and we divide it by the accounts receivable. And the higher the number, the better. It indicates the return a company is getting from its investment in accounts receivable. By maintaining accounts receivable, firms are essentially indirectly extending interest-free loans to their clients. But this is how business works. A high ratio implies that the company operates either on a cash basis or its extension of credit and collections of accounts receivable is efficient. A low ratio implies that the company should reassess its credit policies in order to ensure the timely collection of imparted credit, not earning interest for the firm. Huh? In other words, are you getting paid? You know, you've given a loan to these people who are going to pay you. How often throughout the year will that turn over? How often will they pay you by looking at it? I'm floundering here. How often will those accounts come in the door throughout the year? So we take the total revenue, and that's the top line number. Let's go back to the income statement. That's 6468759. And then we divide that by the accounts receivable, which, look, it's a tiny number, $23.5 million, considering they earned $500 million last year. So their accounts receivable turnover is, what, over 200? 273. That means every 2 days. 565 days in a year. Wait, 360. Where did I get that? 365 days in a year. So you might think, no, I'm not drinking, folks. I'm not under the influence. So 273, which means every day and a half, right? 365 days, they are earning, they're receiving their accounts receivable. So that's a very high number. Now, as we said, some companies have very low accounts receivable turnover. And what does that mean? Well, it means that they either got some deadbeats on who they're selling their stuff to, or that just might be the way the industry works. And one of those industries is the defense industry. Now, I haven't been associated with defense industry in a long, long time. I used to work in the defense industry. No, I was never in the armed services, but I was a sand crab, as they called us, contractor who worked for a defense contractor. And oh my goodness, Uncle Sam pays his debts. Don't worry, you will get paid for your aircraft carrier or your submarine or your jet fighters. But boy, he takes a long time to do it. And there was a movement, at least when I was involved, of trying to get small companies to bid on contracts with the Defense Department. That's all well and good, but these small companies just did not have the resources to wait until Uncle Sam got around to paying them. And so they started screaming and hollering. And last I heard, and this was, again, a long time ago, the Defense Department is now paying a lot sooner than they used to. If anybody knows any differently, if you've if you're in the military or you work for a military contractor, please let me know. But that was the poster example of poor accounts receivable turnover. Now, a very important number, especially for companies like Sprouts and other grocery firms, but also any company like a drugstore or the like, is the inventory turnover. How well is your inventory being managed? Again, take that top line number and divide it by the, in this case, inventory. So remember our top line number of $6.5 billion, and we divide that by the inventory of 254 million. And what we wind up is a number of about 25. Now, what does that mean? It means about 25 times a year that store's entire inventory is being replaced. You walk in, that's every 2 weeks, right? You walk into a Sprouts and you look around and it looks like the stuff has been there forever. No, there's people constantly restacking the shelves. And some things they're restacking every day, and like milk and other breadstuffs and stuff that goes, you know, that gets sold a lot. And other things, no, they don't restock every day. So it turns out that Sprouts is turning over their inventory about once a week. A little, 25.446 is what I got. Twice a week. Every 2 weeks. 52 weeks in a year. I know how many weeks in a year. 25 times, that's about every 2 weeks. So the higher the number, the less time an item spends in inventory, and the better the return the company is able to earn from funds tied up in inventory. As with all ratios, this ratio must be compared against industry average. A low turnover implies poor sales and therefore excess inventory. A high ratio implies either strong sales or maybe just not very good inventory buying or maintenance. High inventory levels are unhealthy. Why? Because they represent an investment with a rate of return of zero. The stuff in the store doesn't make you any money until you sell it. But you got to have stuff in the store before you can sell it. So it's a bit of a conundrum. This is especially true of car dealerships. Sure, they want to have lots of cars on the lot to get people in the door to take a look at the cars, but every car that's sitting on the lot is not making them any money. Plus, if you have a high turnover, it opens up the company up to trouble in the case of falling prices or obsolete products. Right, that's why once the year is over, they want to get those cars off the lot because they got to bring in the new cars. So in the case of Sprouts, are they managing their inventory well? Well, we would look at other grocery stores and probably find that Sprouts is in line with other grocery stores. Slide number 33, total asset turnover. And where is my total asset turnover? This is a measure of how total assets are managed. We take the total revenue, again, the top line number, but this time we look at the total assets. So the top line number again, $6.468 billion. And now we go to our total assets of $3.15 billion. And it turns out it's about two. It's about two, the 2.053 or so. The total asset turnover ratio measures the firm's efficiency at using assets to support sales and revenue. The higher the number, the better. Companies with low profit margins tend to have high asset turnover. Those with high profit margins tend to have low asset turnover. So our two, we need to take a look at our competitors and see how it is in line with those. Now, our last group are the leverage ratios, the solvency ratios. These were very important to Mr. Benjamin Graham. These financial ratios are used to measure the amount of debt being used to support operations and the ability of the firm to service its debt. So we have the debt to equity ratio. This should look familiar to some of you in Business 121 Financial Planning. Total debt to total assets, the same. But the one that Mr. Benjamin Graham was very interested in was times interest earned, as we'll see. These ratios use data from the balance sheet or the income statement. Debt is often referred to as leverage. We're going to come back to this term, leverage. The idea is you are using other people's money to make your money. You are using the borrowed money as a lever to increase your earnings. In fact, when one firm buys another firm using borrowed money, it is often referred to as a leveraged buyout. They didn't come up with their own cash. They used somebody else's cash. And so again, there's that dual-edged sword. We're using somebody else's money to make our money, but we're also loading up on debt, which can get us into serious trouble, especially when we're no longer solvent, when we can no longer pay those debts. That's why it's called also called the solvency ratios. So let's take a look at the first one on slide 35. The debt-to-equity ratio, a measure of a company's financial leverage calculated by dividing the long-term debt by the shareholder's equity. It indicates what proportion of equity and debt the company is using to finance its assets. You take the long-term debt and divide it by the total stockholder's equity. A higher debt-to-equity ratio generally means the company has been aggressive in financing its growth with debt. This can result in lower earnings because as a result of the additional interest expense, so you have to pay fewer dollars in taxes, but you got to pay more in interest. Sometimes investors only use interest-bearing long-term debt instead of total liabilities. Well, I don't like that idea. I want to know how much you owe. Now, maybe you don't owe it for quite some time, so we can, you know, not worry about it, but eventually you're going to have to pay it back. So in my humble opinion, the lower the debt to equity, the better. So let's take a look. Long-term debt is on the balance sheet and the stockholder's equity is on the balance sheet. So our long-term debt is 1.330, right? That's our long-term debt. And our total assets are, where is it? I'm sorry, what did we do? Total assets, right? No, total stock market. Yeah, but it is. Total stockholders equity, 881,290. So we find that 1.330 divided by 881,290 gives us 150%. Ooh, to me, that's quite a bit. I'd hate to be at above 100%. I like to see it less than 100%. But in this case, Sprouts has a high debt ratio to their equity. And they say, what are you worried about? As we're going to see on the next slide, we can pay this debt, no problem. This is what companies have been doing recently. The interest payments are so low these days on debt for companies, you know, bona fide real companies that have good credit ratings, that they've loaded up on debt and used it to expand or pay dividends to shareholders. Heaven forbid they actually raise the wages and hire more workers. So for me, that's high, 150%. That's the one thing about Sprouts that scares me. They have a lot of debt. Times interest earned. Well, you're going to see that they can pay that debt. No problem, dear students. The times interest earned, this is the one that Mr. Benjamin Graham really liked. You take the earnings before interest and taxes and you divide it by your interest expense. It measures the ability of a company to meet its fixed interest payments. Times interest earned is used to determine how frequently interest payments are earned by the company during a year. Obviously, the higher the better, 3 or 4 is considered adequate. Sprouts is 26. So let's go to the earnings before interest and taxes. Where is the interest? There it is, 391,661. And we divide that by our 15,014,787 interest expense, and we get 26.5, which means every 2 weeks, dear students, Sprouts earns enough money to pay their interest payments. So are they worried about getting hauled into a bankruptcy court? They're not worried at all. Interest payments are so low these days. Interest rates are so low these days that they can easily pay. Now, if they were to start losing money for some odd reason, they don't seem to be. People need groceries. People need to eat. Then the world could change dramatically for them because we might see them having a hard time paying their interest payments and then having a hard time paying the debt as it comes due. But I think yours truly is just being a worrywart. I don't think the folks at Sprouts, I haven't asked them, but I don't think they're worried about it. And then finally, the total assets, the total total liabilities, the total assets, total debts, the total assets, measure of how much of a company's total assets have been financed by debt. So these takes the total assets and divide them by the total debts and divide them by the total assets. And this is something that we do in the financial planning and money management, similar to what we do in that class. Total debt to total assets includes both short-term and long-term debt and assets. If it varies substantially from that first debt to equity ratio, which used long-term debts, the company may be relying heavily on short-term debt. In other words, they're using credit card debt as opposed to mortgage debt. A heavy reliance on short-term debt can denote some risk, but it turns out that they're actually doing better in this case. If you take their total liabilities, which on the balance sheet is total liabilities $2,270 million, and divide that by the total assets of $3.15 billion, you get around 72%, which again, you know, to my mind, that's a little high. I don't like to have that much debt, but I'm a worrywart. Make sense? Okay. So that, dear students, was our discussion of financial ratios. To review, do we use any one ratio to tell us yes or no, this is a company we're going to buy, it's a company we're going to sell? No, we need to look at all of them and create, I like to use the term stew, I don't know if it makes sense, a stew or maybe a collage or whatever, a mix-up, a whatever you want to call it. And that allows us to get an overall picture, a better picture of the company, realizing that we have to look at the competitors and the market as a whole, and it doesn't make the decision any easier, but it gives us more information. Okay, dear students, we are finished with our fundamental analysis now. We've been doing fundamental analysis. We're now going to take a look at a couple of chapters where we discuss things that are helpful to us, but you know, they don't really help us with any individual companies. They help us understand better ourselves, the market as a whole. And then we'll take a look at some serious silliness when we take a look at a whole other way of doing your analysis, and that's called technical analysis. Okay, so we'll see you in our next two chapters, stock price behavior and market efficiency, and then when we take a look at behavioral finance and technical analysis in Chapter 8. We, again, are so proud of you. You've come so far. You've reached the pinnacle. Literally, you've reached the pinnacle and are now looking down back upon where we've been. And now we have a little bit a downhill. We actually have a little bit of downhill because the next couple of chapters are really not that hard. There's really not a whole lot to them. So in this chapter, go do the assignment where you're going to do some financial ratios. You don't have to do all of them, but make sure you do two from each group. Don't just do the common or market ratios because they're easy and they're usually just looking them up. But make sure you do at least, you know, a few, five, six or so, where you have to do your own calculations and search out that information on the balance sheet and the income statement. And I apologize. I know all those numbers can really make people make people's eyes blur over. The accountants have it over us in this case because they've already done that. They've already gone screaming into the night. But it's not that hard once you do it. And, of course, you know who to contact if you need help. We are so proud of you. Keep up the great work. You are awesome!